now. Scotland's Talkin. Call 0333 20 20 401 and join the debate.
Hello from me, Ali Bally. Welcome to this week's edition of Scotland's Talkin'. On the programme today, how are you feeling about the prospect of Donald Trump moving into the White House in 5 days' time? The preparations for his inauguration have been blown off course by unverified claims the Russians have got a dossier of embarrassing material about him.
It's all fake news. It's phony stuff. It didn't happen. I'm also very much of a germaphobe, by the way.
So there's no sign of a presidential makeover yet. He's still the Donald. I'll have American politics expert Murray Leith joining me in the studio. And we'll also be asking how much you'll miss this man.
Yes, we did. Yes, we can. Thank you. God bless you.
That's coming up after 11 o'clock. But first, how can one lorry cause so much trouble? Thousands of drivers wasted time sitting in traffic jams after a truck blew over on the Forth Road Bridge when they weren't supposed to be using it.
There are 34,000 vehicles on transport operator licences. This is a very, very rare situation.
That's Brian Kenny from the Road Haulage Association. But let's not pretend it's a one-off. We've all seen HGV vehicles doing it on stormy weather. What are they playing at? It's all coming up on Scotland's Talkin'. 10 past 10, Sunday morning. This is Scotland's Talkin'. I'm Ali Bally. Good morning. Thank you very much indeed for your company today. We'll be talking American presidency in the next hour. But this hour, amongst other things, were you caught up in the chaos caused by just one lorry this week? Thousands of drivers wasted hours of their time on Wednesday because the Forth Road Bridge had to be closed, all because of a truck which toppled over in high winds at 2 o'clock in the morning when high-sided vehicles were banned from using the bridge. The driver has been charged by police in connection with the incident. Now, as you can imagine, it caused misery across Fife and Forth Valley as all the traffic was forced to use long diversion routes to get to the other side of the Forth. We had the Transport Minister, Humza Yousaf, coming on the radio stressing the importance of drivers obeying high wind warnings. And yet, there were still lorries and high-sided vehicles taking their chances on the likes of the Erskine Bridge and the Tay Bridge, the Tay Road Bridge, after that incident on Wednesday. Did you spot them blatantly driving past those giant electronic signs, which are useful for nothing, which say close to high-sided vehicles? Which bit of the message didn't they understand? Were you one of the ones who was caught up in it? I was hearing about a family who were heading off on holiday and were trying to get to Edinburgh Airport, left plenty of time. I think they were from Fife and you know, got jammed up in it, missed their flight, etc., etc. And the whole thing was just thrown into chaos. Another young man who had a job interview, and it was the third and final interview in London. It was down to the final interviews, and he missed the interview. The interviews took place, and as far as I know, he couldn't get there in time for his slot. So just a couple of instances where people were hanging around, you know, and really, what is it about truck drivers who think they can just carry on? Why do they do it? That's what our reporter Hope Webb asked Brian Kenny from the Road Haulage Association.
The individual thoughts of a driver are very much, as I say, that they are individual thoughts. And at this moment in time, whether that will be investigated by almost certainly the police and the authorities, we sent out communications to our members yesterday, giving guidance on high winds. We knew the high winds were coming. But like everything else, you know, as the information filters down, it's down to an individual behind the wheel to take heed. You know, at no point could we ever condone somebody disobeying a direct traffic order.
So there wouldn't have been pressure from a company that this driver is working for to continue despite warnings being put in place?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The safety of the general public, the safety of the load, the reputation of the business all hinge on that driver making that delivery on time, with the load intact, with nobody being put at risk. Absolutely no point would the driver be put under any pressure whatsoever to disobey any road traffic regulations, whether it be driver's hours, road traffic signs, route diversions. That just wouldn't have happened.
And when it comes to, obviously in this case, the lorry has caused quite a lot of disruption and damage to the actual bridge. I mean, where does the cost for that get picked up?
Clyde,
does the company itself end up having to fork out?
I suppose that is a possibility. It'd be unkind to comment at this stage as to who would actually foot the bill for that. But again, it may be an insurable loss.
From your experience, how much would an accident like this cost to repair?
It will be in very high thousands, without a doubt. Recovery is extremely expensive. It's a heavy, heavy vehicle to try and get up. It takes hours. And obviously, it's a very, very expensive piece of kit in its own right to put correct. So that has to be done. The bridge itself will have to be inspected. That's very, very expensive, very important it's done, and of course the ongoing repairs. When it comes to the closure of the bridge and the congestion, it will be into the millions in terms of the onward cost of delays and things like that. But we have to bear in mind that, you know, the 1.3 million HGV drivers in Scotland, there are 34,000, just under 34,000 transport operators or vehicles on transport operator licences. This is a very, very rare situation to happen.
Brian Kenny from the Road Haulage Association. Brian there said, you know, it's going to run into the millions in lost revenue for businesses, in damages, etc., etc. And Brian also, when Hope there asked him, would the drivers be under any time restriction, any target? Would he be coming to the bridge and saying, I've got to get over the bridge because it says I've got to be there in that time? Interesting that Brian said, absolutely not. They are not under any time pressure. That's not what one of the drivers said on television this week. He said they are under pressure, and if they don't get there on time, they lose part of the money. So they are under pressure. So come on, Brian. You know, absolutely not. Surely. Are you a trucker? What's your thoughts? As Brian said, he says it's just a small minority who are doing it. Is that your experience on the roads? And how do we stop it? Maybe we should bring the tolls back. That would be one way of doing it. They would have to approach the toll, so if it was an HGV vehicle, it wouldn't get over. What do you think? Give me a call. Let me know. 0333 2020 401. Stephen's first this morning. Good morning, Stephen.
Morning, Ali. How are you today?
Tickety-boo. Just good. Thank you. Yourself?
Not bad, Ali. It's a nice sunny day, so I'm going to go for a wee walk later on, Ali.
Good. Clear the head.
Clear the head, Ali. I'll try to go for a long walk, Ali, to clear my head.
Before you go for that long walk, what's your thoughts on the roads then? It's a lot of inconvenience for one driver, isn't it?
It's a lot of inconvenience, but the first thing I'd like to say, Ali, see the barrier was on the board. He wasn't on here, obviously, but he was moaning that he missed a job interview in London.
Yep.
I wouldn't have gave him the job, Ali, because if he was that desperate, he should have been doing the night before, Ali. That's my first thought. And my second thought is, Transport Scotland, or Transurf, is in charge of our roads, and the Minister and the Transport Minister, they should be pulled over the coals, and they should be fitting the belt, Ali. Because there's slip roads well before the junctions of that Forth Road bridge and the Erskine bridges and any other bridges, and they should have been diverting the traffic off it. And I'll give you my main reasons for this, Ali. There's a lot of foreign nationals out there, Ali. It's all right sticking up in a gantry. This is the problem we're going to have. And it was a lucky escape. That's what I would say. And the police and the road traffic department, they should have been there as well, in the councils. Not just that lorry driver, Ali.
So you think there should
be... There's no business out there, Ali. It's no good targets. I know they've got to get to their destination, but health and safety is out the window in the road haulage. But I would say, because you can pass your test, Ali, in a car, in a housing scheme, and you can go into a motorway. I think it's crazy. Nobody should have a driving licence. Because this is where the experience comes through the years to become a HGV driver, Ali, because I've got 30-odd years of experience, Ali, driving cars up to HGVs, buses. Your listeners will be surprised at this. I'm very, very experienced. But it starts right down at the very, very bottom, Ali, with a car licence and the lack of training. Because, as I said before, They should be on the motorways. They should be seeing these big gantries. Then when the progress to the HGV stage, you can jump in a wee lorry. So what? It's only a basic lorry. It's at your testing alley. Then you can go into these bigger eight-wheelers.
We're in danger of me actually agreeing with you on something here.
It's a transport, I would say, industry, and the folk that dish out these licences, like the DVLA, willy-nilly. Then somebody goes and sits in a lorry. They might get into your Ritchies or something like that, Ali. And they'll sit in one of these big lorries. But I'll tell you what, Ali, half of them has not got a clue of these drivers, these HGV drivers out there. I would say quite a few of them, Ali. They've not got a Scooby-Doo, Ali.
But they've gone through the testing.
They've gone through a daft course for maybe for 2 or 3 weeks.
It's not a daft course.
You're going to charge a 50 to a 60 ton lorry in a motorway.
It's not a daft course. It's not a daft course. You've sat the course. You know, you say you've sat it and you've got your pasture test. You must know
how... I was lucky. I mean, I took 3 goes at it, 92.
Exactly. So if
it's one in
here, hang on, Stephen. Hang on a minute. Stephen.
Twice I got it. I didn't have a clue, Ali.
I know you still don't have a clue. You still don't have a clue. You're saying you failed You say you sat at three, it took you 3 times to pass it. So it has to be a reasonably difficult test then, surely.
No, Ali, I didn't have a clue, Ali, where I was going. I could drive the lorry, see somebody sitting beside me, take that lorry down their bag and take it round there. No bother, Ali. But when you set your test, you're under instructions. But if somebody told me how to get there, I can drive it, Ali. But see, once I passed my test, I didn't have a clue where I was going, Ali. And half the time, I was just, it's a year of experience to get to the stage where I'm at now, Ali. I would say I was out of 100, Ali. I've been 99. As good as ending the roads out there. Now you've got a bus licence as well, Ali. But there's a lot of foreign nationals out there as well, Ali. They've not got a clue, Ali.
Right, Stephen, go for your long walk now. Thank you. Where I was going to agree with them was when you do, and this came up on the show a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the possibility of it being introduced into your driving test and driving lessons, driving on a motorway. Now, that's not always going to be possible for everywhere because there's not a motorway handy everywhere, but it should be available for learner drivers to go on a motorway. And I agree with Stephen there. You know, you get your test and then the next day you could be on the motorway, driving down the hard shoulder, wondering why everybody's looking at you. And you're thinking, what is this thing going down here? It has happened, and it can cause accidents. So I agree with him on that part. But I don't agree that the young guy who missed his interview should have been down the night before, because that's just added expense to somebody who doesn't have a job and probably couldn't afford it. Dave is on the phone. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Ali.
Good morning to you. Good morning.
Belated Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much indeed, and to you too.
It's a couple of things that I was explaining to you.
Explain it to me then.
On this, the current one, on what you have just been sitting on the phone here in the bedroom listening to the character that's just been on, and totally, I'll no bother about that.
What's your point, right, Dave? Come on.
My point, Ali, I was an Arctic driver for 30 years in my earlier career.
Right.
And my one main point on this is the situations that are arising, take their license off them. The penalties are no strong enough for these guys to, I'll just take a chance in that. Mm-hmm. Take their license off them that they've paid a fortune to get and get in good jobs. If they were a threat of their license being taken off them, it might give a different attitude to the clowns that are doing it.
How long were you driving for, HGV-wise?
I passed my test at 17-year-old on a bread van, a 3-ton van.
Right.
And for 21, spent 30 years on Arctics.
Okay. So, Dave, you're driving at 2 o'clock in the morning and you approach the Forth Road Bridge and it says close to high-sided vehicles and you're running an hour behind time. Would you have chanced it?
No. See, Ali, there's all different things maybe people didn't understand. Heavy loads that can keep you on the road, empty trailers that can throw you all over the place, the type of trailers with the type of wheels they have that they're unstable going round. There's various, quite a few different things, Ali.
There's a big difference from crossing a motorway or a bridge in high winds and carrying a load of tatties.
It shouldn't be done. Yeah, if the warnings are up and these guys that are doing it take their license off them, and but as I say, what's he going to do to these guys? They're going to get taken to court and fined a couple of £100 or something, and 3 points or 6 points on their license. Take their license off them.
Okay, Dave, thank you very much indeed.
I had another part that the guy said I could
go on
mention
then, right.
If you didn't mind.
Right, okay.
It was about Edinburgh City buses on Christmas Day. The supposedly Lothian buses. Now, all they served, apart from Seaton Sands out the town, I thought Seaton Sands is where you went for your summer holidays. No, in a bus on Christmas Day. That was the only service that left the city boundaries, apart from the airport bus. The other bus, Midlothian, the whole of Midlothian, no service. I can't speak about East Lothian because I don't know if East Coast buses had a service on or no. But it's Edinburgh should have been set. The Lothian buses should have served the whole service, even on a restricted service.
Are bus drivers not allowed the day off then? Do you not think we can have a day that you don't need buses, like Christmas Day?
Yes, that's what I said. If they can't fulfil their service to people with Midlothian as well as their name suggests, nay buses. Why the privileged few in Edinburgh?
So, okay, it's either all or nothing as far as you're concerned.
All or nothing, yes.
Okay, Dave, thank you very much indeed. Any thoughts on that? Are you involved with the buses? Surely bus drivers and bus staff could be allowed the day off on Christmas Day as well. Thank you, Dave. And we say good morning to Joseph. How are you doing, Joseph?
Hi, Ali. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
It's a nice, kind of wet, kind of solemn morning. Not too much wind, but just nice.
Dampish, I thought.
Right.
So anyway, Ali, right, what you got?
The Road Haulage Association guy was on. He is talking the wrong way. The road haulage companies that send their drivers out are booked into all destinations, Ali, Asda, Tesco's, MS, you name it, breweries and everything. They've got to be there for that time, Ali.
They've got a time slot, haven't they?
Yes, and they've not there for that time, Ali. They've put back, and their company's losing money because they can't pick up their next load in time.
Right.
So the driver is not getting his bonus. He's not he's got to get fueled up again to try and make up that ground. And the money it's lost trying fueling up. And for the bridges, why is the cameras not picking up that truck? And where was the barriers and where was the emergency road trucks that usually sit at these bridges? Why was they not stopped?
Yeah, I just wondered if it was 2 o'clock in the morning and everybody's away home. But
it shouldn't be, Ali.
It shouldn't be. No, we were well warned, weren't we?
Yeah, and why was there no barriers put up? I can't understand that. This company that's running that bridge, where was it? Where were these top people? It's always the top people that come on, and then you get one of the ones that come on like that, the driver that said, I'm under pressure because if I don't get to that load, my company's fined. You know what I mean? They lose a lot of money if you don't get the deliveries to that place. You know what I mean?
I was surprised when Brian Kenny, it was on our news as well as, you know, just playing that little piece.
I was surprised. I was totally taken aback because my friends are in the haulage business. And that's where they've got to make up their times, Ali.
They're all on targets.
Yeah.
You know, and for him to say absolutely not, I thought was quite astounding.
Yeah, that's the reason, Ali. And that's the reason why that driver's probably done that. You know what I mean? Well, if I've got a chance to get across this bridge, I'll make up my time. Unfortunately, it went the wrong way. You know?
Well, certainly went the wrong way for him, didn't it?
Yeah. The point about this, all the drivers that's in that union should get him at a meeting and say, you're totally wrong. And apologise to all your drivers. He's blaming the drivers. It's him. He doesn't know how much these drivers are under pressure, Ali.
Right. Okay then, Joseph. Thank you very much indeed. Ian's in Pennycook. Ian, good morning.
Hi, Ali.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
Good, thank you.
Good enough. Ali, just about the lorry situation again in the Forth Road Bridge. Now, the gentleman that was on just a minute ago kind of stole my thunder just a wee shade there about barriers. The other thing I was going to say is, I mean, drivers could have been sitting in traffic for hours and hours and hours because there is a problem, an unforeseen circumstance or whatever it is. But I think the gentleman was quite right in mentioning the fact that there should be barriers up. Mm-hmm. The other thing I was going to say, Ali, as I'll go back to my barriers in a minute, is the there'll be staff at the Forth Road Bridge 24 hours a day, Ali. They're sitting in that big control tower 24 hours a day. Definitely. The other thing I was going to say about barriers, Ali, somebody gave me a newspaper cutting. Another situation that's a wee bit similar to this is the Lindisfarne Causeway. Now, they have flashing lights when the tide's in.
Right.
When the tide's out, you're free to go across there for traffic and whatever it is. Now, once the tide comes back in again, traffic can attempt to go across, and a lot of times they do get stranded. But they shouldn't be there. There should be the same thing as what should be at the Forth Road Bridge, is they should have barriers, in my opinion. So if a barrier's down, you kind of get through the barrier. End of story.
Ian, I think it's a very, very good point that you and a couple of other calls have made. On the approach road coming from Fife to the bridge, I mean, I've said bring back the tolls, but that wouldn't have helped in this case because he would have been over the bridge before he got to the tolls. So
Ali must always say, on the Edinburgh City bypass, there are signs, I'll say, about maybe 4 miles from the bridge telling you to go Kincardine because the conditions are that bad or the bridge is closed. So it's not just a case of getting there and then you discover that you can't go any further. No, if the driver was coming up, well, it was a Dumfries-based company, these guys would probably be coming up the Edinburgh City bypass. There are signs on the bypass, maybe three-quarter way down the city bypass, telling you...
The driver in this case, Ian, was coming from the north. So he came down, it was northbound, wasn't it?
But I'd imagine there would be signs on the other side then, Ali.
Why couldn't Amy, who run the bridge... Why couldn't they have had barriers up or patrols with the vehicles as they used to do in the lay-by a fair length back from the bridge, stopping the HGVs? Why couldn't...
Well, they use them elsewhere. They have things like snow gates at different the bottom of a summit or something like that. So the snow gates are doing the same job as a barrier would do, exactly.
Is this a case of saving money, Ian? Thank you very much indeed for your call. The number again, if you'd like to join us, 0333 2020 401. We'll do another call in a moment. Will Young and Leave Right Now. Andrew, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Ali. How are you, sir?
Good, thank you. Good. So what's your point, then?
The line.
Oh. Andrew's disappeared. Okay, we'll get Andrew back in a moment for some... Oh, there we go. It's ringing now. No, I'll take it off because Andrew seems to have disappeared on the switchboard. We'll try and get him back in a second. We're talking about the chaos on the roads on Tuesday. Was it Tuesday? Yeah, Wednesday. Tuesday night, Wednesday morning type of thing as well. So let me see. Who else have we got? Alan Montgomery. Thanks, Alan. He says, as we're aware, the Forth Road Bridge had to be closed due to the actions of an HGV driver. That's true. Despite the road being closed at 12:30, he says, this inconsiderate driver decided to cross about 2:30 with the resulting chaos ensuing. That's very, very true, Alan. So thank you for that. He says, as a former traffic officer, I have a suggestion. Good. One, give powers to Transport for Scotland similar to those employed by the Highways Agency in England. Right. When any of the road bridges require to be closed due to severe weather, Transport for Scotland officers would have the power to physically close the road and force such a high-sided vehicle to stop. And point number three, the vehicles and staff are already in operation, and I think all parties would back such legislation, if only to prevent the problem reoccurring. Some decent thoughts there. Alan, get them through to those that count. Absolutely. Thank you very much indeed. The cost to the country must be very high, he says, when you consider the length of detours from the Forth, the Erskine and any other bridges exposed to high winds. Certainly, we've discovered before when the Forth Road Bridge closes, it's absolute chaos. And it was. There's no two ways about it. It's causing chaos on all the roads round about, trying to get into the Kincardine Bridge, the Clickmannan Bridge and all around that area. It was causing a lot of problems. So thank you for that. Andrew's back with us. Andrew, hi there.
Hi, Ali. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
How you doing, sir?
I'm good, thank you. So what's your thoughts on this, then?
I think, basically, I presume there would have been very big flashing signs saying, you know, debate with many of your callers today seems to centre around that, saying that's not enough. But literally, Ali, if train drivers and pilots on runways taxiing to take off ignore signs, Ali, you know, look what happened in Las Rodeas Airport in Tenerife many decades ago. World's worst air crash because a Dutch pilot's impatience, Ali, to get out before the fog closed the airport. He crashed into another jumbo jet and caused the biggest air crash in world history at the time, killing hundreds. Now, nobody lost their life here, but the problem is somebody's got to pick up the bill now for tens of thousands of pounds here. The driver was actually charged, nobody's mentioned that, by the police, Ali, so it's, I presume he's been charged with dangerous driving, I would have thought. So he may well lose his licence anyway, you know, according to the courts. So, you know, do we need to spoon-feed everybody nowadays, Ali? People, your callers are suggesting we do this, we do that, we do the next thing. The flashing red lights in bridge close to high vehicles, what did he not understand about that?
This is because of one driver, and that's maybe what we should be looking at as well, saying, hang on, this is one guy who got it wrong here. One guy. You know, thousands upon thousands of motorists cross that bridge every week and get it right, and truck drivers get it right in the majority of times.
But
you know, it's like any occupation. You know, you get good people in an occupation, you get some that will take chances and are not so good. So, you know, here we have that situation.
Well, I think the bottom line here, Ali, sums this up, is if you cut corners, that's what can happen, I'm afraid.
Absolutely. Andrew, good to hear from you. Thank you very much indeed.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. 0333 2020 401, that's the number if you'd like to join us. And coming up in the next hour, we'll be talking about the Donald. Scotland's talking on a Sunday morning. Music and conversation with me, Ali Bally. It's just gone 10 minutes away from 11, and we've been talking truck drivers and the chaos that was caused because of one truck driver. And then, of course, looking at it in general, most people sort of coming up with the thoughts here, looking on some of the Facebook comments as well, most coming up with the fact that, you know, these are drivers, professional people, they should be able to read the signs. Jim says, it's a simple one, really. We are dealing with responsible adults that pick up a salary. They have either taken a chance thinking the authorities would close the bridge at the least bit of wind, I can make it, or their company have instructed, just get over the bridge. It's a big diversion, but make no mistake, there should not be barriers or additional policing. If an adult can't read a sign, it's a bad day. Can they read their wage packet? Jim, thank you for your comment. Let's keep up the good work. Enjoy the show. Good. Thank you. I think we'll sort of wind that subject up because we're looking to the next subject in the next hour, which will be talking about Donald Trump moving into the White House on Friday. More about that, as I say, in the next hour. Have you got a thought on it? We have two opposite thoughts coming in. What a wonderful world this would be, Sam Cooke. Well, on Friday, Donald Trump gets moved into the White House. Now, how do you feel about that? We're taking your calls from now, if you want to give a call and you've got a comment on it. Do you think it's a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Well, we're finding out from a couple of people joining me in the studio. Murray Leith is a lecturer in politics at the University of West of Scotland. And also joining us is James Doherty. James is an unashamed Trump supporter. He's a Glaswegian stroke American. We're going to find out more about that, as I say, in the next hour. If you've got a comment on the American, because I really do think this is going to affect us all. I have to say, you know, my own point of view was when he started running for it, there was a little bit of the mischief in me that said, that wouldn't have shake things up if he got in. But then I went to the back of my mind and said, you know, it won't happen. Like many people, we did. We said, this will not happen. It has happened, and it will be happening from Friday. And if you caught sight of any of the television footage this week of his press conference, where I maybe thought that he is going to go all presidential style when he was elected, it seemed to be that, you know, he'd maybe just taken a hang on and going to be the president of the United States of America. I'm going to up my game here. it all changed in the press conference that he had. I thought, anyway, what was your thoughts of it? You know, this man is going to have an amazing power over the whole world. So as I say, we're looking for your calls. And the number to give us a call on is 0333 2020 401. I'll introduce my guests after the news at 11, which comes up right after these.
Now, Scotland's Talkin'. Call 0333 2020 401 and join the debate.
On Friday, Donald Trump moves into the White House. How do you feel about that then? This weekend, when you might have thought he'd be concentrating on practicing his lines for his inauguration ceremony in Washington, his team are still dealing with the aftermath of unverified claims that the Russians are keeping a dossier of embarrassing material about him. The US intelligence services can't say if it's true, and they're adamant they didn't leak it. The finger of blame's been pointed at a former British MI6 agent instead, and a one-time British ambassador to Moscow, Sir Tony Brenton, said he thought the allegations were shaky. President-elect Trump hit back in his usual style at his press conference this week.
Can you give us a question?
Go ahead.
Mr. President-elect.
Go ahead.
Mr. President-elect, since you are attacking our news organization,
not you.
Can you give us a chance?
Your organization.
You are attacking
terrible.
Our news organization.
Your organization.
Can you give us a chance
Let's
to
go.
Ask a question, sir?
Go ahead.
Sir,
quiet.
Can you state...
Quiet.
Mr. President-elect.
Go ahead.
Can you state categorically...
She's asking a question. Don't be rude.
Mr. President-elect, can you give us a question?
Don't be
You're
rude.
Attacking us. Can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
Can you
no, I'm not going to give you a question. I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you state categorically...
You are fake news.
Sir,
go ahead.
Can you state categorically that nobody... No, Mr. President-elect, that's not appropriate.
We're going to spend the rest of the programme looking at what the next 4 years might bring and to reflect on Barack Obama's 8 years in office. Tell me what you're thinking. For starters, how about the fact that we've just had to bleep out the man who's about to become the so-called leader of the free world? Joining me in the studio is Murray Leith, who's a lecturer in politics at the University of West of Scotland, and James Doherty, a none-ashamed Trump-supporting Glaswegian stroke American stroke businessman. We'll talk to both of them at the moment. An example of not very presidential behaviour. You know, we've had him now and we've heard all the haranguing that's going on as well from him. First of all, Murray, let's bring you in. A very good morning to you, first of all. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. What do you take on this thing? What's your thoughts here?
Well, my thoughts is that a lot of the behaviour he could get away with to a certain extent because he's not yet president. There were people who thought that winning the presidency would change him, and that's clearly not happened. Now the people are saying, well, when he takes office, that's clearly going to change him. We see presidents change a lot, but he would have to change a heck of a lot to become like past presidents.
Is that, though, what has made him appeal to the American public, do you think? Do you think in the fact that he's not taking nonsense from anybody else? They knew surely what they were going to get when they were voting.
Yeah, I don't know if everybody knew what they were going to get. It made him appeal to a certain segment of the population, yes. And it made him appeal to perhaps those who wouldn't have necessarily voted for other Republicans.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's a mixed bag that supported him, and some like what he does and some don't. Some like his policies, some don't. It depends on what day of the week it is.
Okay. James, good morning to you.
Good morning, Molly.
Great. Now, tell us what your position is then.
Position is, you know, I think Trump is going to make America great again. I think it's what America needs. It's a big wake-up call for the world. It's a wake-up call for Americans. And it's what America needs. We've been going in a bad direction for too long. Politicians have corrupted America, and it's time to put people in office that are going to clean up the country.
James, are you a Glaswegian? Are you an American? What are you?
I'm a little bit of both.
You can't be. Come on. Choose your side here, man.
I'm probably more American than I am Scottish. I grew up in Scotland, moved to America, and spent predominantly my life in America.
Right. And now you're back here.
I'm back here to wreak havoc.
Will Donald, when he starts to wreak havoc, is that something that would say to you, I want to get back there, I want to be part of that?
You know what? I watched America be a country that was a country where the middle class could succeed. And I watched it deteriorate over the last 25 years. And I left for a reason, because I wanted to give my kids a better opportunity. And a better opportunity is in Scotland. Whereas 25 years ago, America was a land of the free, the middle class could make it. And that doesn't exist anymore. It's not happening.
Murray, you've made your life in Scotland at the moment as well. It's, you know, what brought you over here then?
Well, I was, I'm same as James, I was born here.
Right.
But I moved back to Scotland 15 years ago to study and lecture. I actually research nationalism, you see, so we're better to be than Scotland. But at the same time, I have to question your statement there, James. I mean, you say, you know, and I don't disagree with you. When I moved to America, I got to go to university, I got to, you know, advance. But my point is that the very people that he's appointing to his cabinet are people that have done very, very well for themselves over the past 25 years. People that have risen to the very top through the very system that you're condemning. I mean, he's got politicians in his cabinet. He's got governors. He's got representatives. He's got senators. He's got businessmen of major Fortune 500 companies. And these people have done very, very well for themselves out of the system that currently exists.
But these are people that had money in their pocket. These are people that came from wealth. These are not people who went there with nothing and built themselves.
Why are they going to change the system, then?
The system's got to change.
Yeah, but they're not necessarily going to change it. Why would someone like Rex Tillerson change the system when he's made his living?
Because they're not corrupt politicians. These are people who are not getting money put in their pocket. These people are not getting...
Jeff Sessions has been in the political system longer than I've actually been out of school.
Well, just going back to this week on television, you're a supporter, James. Well, you're not cringing.
Somewhat no. It's what I expect. I expect to see him get in the news media's face. I expect to see him see it how it is. And that's the problem. You can't see it how it is in America anymore. People get offended. They sue you. You can't sneeze and somebody wants to sue you in America anymore. It's ridiculous.
And again, from your point of view, from looking at politics, I thought it was squirming stuff.
There is some squirming stuff. When you're president of the United States, there are clear boundaries and there are clear things that you can and cannot do. He's not president yet, which is why he's been given a certain amount of latitude on some things. But when he's in office, there are some...
It's Friday.
It's Friday. Well, that's the problem. I mean, that's the problem.
He's not going to change.
There are, well, maybe not, but there are going to be consequences to actions that he hasn't necessarily faced before. You know, there are rules and regulations that will impact upon him once he takes the office that don't currently impact upon him now.
What comes through to me, though, is that the consequences as such, who's going to tell him? Because he doesn't listen to anybody. So, you know, who's going to be brave? You know, we had this when he was setting up in the Many Estate in Aberdeen, you know, and I was doing this programme then, and I remember the calls, and I remember watching the TV footage and how the police seemed to do what Donald wanted in that area at that time, and those that were resident were pushed to the side, and those that were involved with Donald just were like little puppets. Nobody would actually go to him and say, you cannot do this.
Well, ultimately, of course, that's why he and Alex Salmond fell out, because Alex Salmond told him, no, we're not doing that. When he turned around and said, I don't want this wind farm offshore, it's spoiling the view for the golfers, Alex Salmond said, well, tough, we're investing in renewable energy and it's going there.
Is it a right move, though, for the politicians of this country, Scotland, to fall out with them in the way that, I mean, Alex Salmond, yes, fell out with them and wasn't talking towards the end. Our current First Minister took his special ambassadorship, whatever that meant. I'm not quite sure what it meant anyway. But, you know, he is a businessman as well. He has two businesses in this country that we know of, one in Aberdeen, one in Ayrshire, employs a lot of people. You know, we're not going to be top of his popularity. Well, Nicola Sturgeon's not top of his popularity list, is she?
No, but at the same time, I mean, he deals with a number. I mean, when he becomes president, of course, he's going to be dealing with world leaders who haven't been very polite about him. And, you know, some who have and some who haven't. So I think he's got a very thick skin. He's been in business, and he knows he gets under people's skin. He does it on purpose. He does it to put them off to a certain extent. That's the way he plays it, especially with politicians. Politicians are used to polite. Politicians are used to diplomatic. He goes in there like a tank, you know, and his whole object is to put the other person off and leave them floundering so he can do the dance around them.
And he does it very well.
He does it very, very well. But the trouble is, it's worked in the business field. Sometimes, I mean, we're not entirely sure. Some of his business acumen may be more, you know, up to what he says than what has actually occurred. But the political system, now he's into the political system proper. Governing is not campaigning. Big difference.
Is this what appealed to you about him, James?
Well, yeah, somewhat, because, you know, America's become predictable, very predictable. The strategy of America, people know what's going to come the next step with Obama. What's happened is, you know, let's use Syria as an example. Obama says, use chemical weapons. That's you crossing the red line. Did he do anything? No, didn't do a thing. With Trump, you know you're going to get a response that's going to make you scared. Russia, China, Mexico are all on the back foot right now because they don't know what Trump's next step is. The unpredictability of him is making America stronger again because it's creating fear, and it's something that hasn't existed in a long time in America.
So would you like to see him act as a president, as we would expect a president to see, or as a supporter, do you want him to stay the way that you know him now?
I like his unpredictability. I think that gives him a strength. I think that gives him a purpose, and it creates fear. And I think America needs to have fear again. That's what he needs to become a power. Right now, we're not a power. Right now, we're second.
America has the largest military in the world by far. It dwarfs everybody else. It's got a nuclear arsenal that can make the rubble bounce through several dozen times over. I'll tell you something. America, when people say make America great again, I've always think, well, two things. One, that's a bit of an insult to those people who have been working hard for America.
Well, look at Putin. Look at Putin. Putin's walking all over Europe. What did America do? They've done a thing. They're standing watching.
Putin is complaining right now because the Americans and the British have both sent troops to Poland. Now, why is he complaining? Because he thinks that Poland and areas like that should be his area of influence. Well, Obama's just said, actually, no. Poland is a member of NATO. We're sending troops there to reinforce the
Obama
NATO.
Obama has destroyed America. He's taken it systematically apart.
Exactly.
From legislation. From legislation.
Creating
from unemployment.
I'd like to point out the Congress passing legislation.
In America, you know, they say it's 5%, but it's because people drop off.
Okay, right. Hang on a second. Hang on. It doesn't help anybody. We're listening to the radio when we're shouting over each other, as we know when we've listened to Scottish politic programmes on telly. So no, it doesn't work. If you have a comment, love to hear from you. 0333 2020 401 is the number to join us. And let's go to the first caller on this subject then and see what he's got to say about it. Norman's in Aberdeen. Norman.
Hello.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm very well, and a good new year to you, Ali.
Thank you very much indeed. Okay, what's your point then?
I would just like to, first and foremost, ask the viewers their opinion, right? Donald Trump, he's very proud that his mother was from the Outer Hebrides, right? Number one, does that entitle Donald Trump to dual nationality? Nationality of the United Kingdom and the United States? I don't know. Can someone answer that for me? Number two, I think that Donald Trump becoming president of the United States is the best thing that has happened to the United States. He hates Alex Salmond, as he does Nicola Sturgeon. He makes absolutely no bones about this. Divisions of countries, as the SNP want to do. He's got no time. He's got no time for this. Nicola Sturgeon is saying, bring all the immigrants from Syria in. I don't think Mr. Trump would like Britain to be a country that is full of immigrants, because he's certainly stopping the immigrants in coming into America. I think that, I know that I've read this morning, I Googled, and Trump wants a very, very, very close relationship with Great Britain. I think this is the best thing that's happened to Britain. You've got to remember, Donald Trump is half British himself.
Let's just go over to Murray and ask the question about his citizenship then, Murray.
No, he does not have British citizenship under the 1983 Nationality Act, because his mother is the British citizen. He'd have to apply for it. He doesn't automatically get it. Funnily enough, under the 1983 Act, if his father was British, he would automatically get it. But
right.
Because his mother, he would have to apply for it, and he would have to be judged as whether he was a reputable person to be given citizenship. And I say that was the specific act in force for when he was born.
Okay. We've got James here. There's Norman saying that he thinks he's the best thing that's going to happen to America, and Britain will benefit as well.
Yeah, you know, the call is correct. I think he's going to address, like he said, the situation with Mexico, the wall. Immigration is a huge issue in America today, and it's going to get worse. The Syrian issue, the flocking into Europe. You know, it's time to make America great again, and Donald Trump's the man to get America back on track.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, Norman. Let's go to Jimmy Borland. Jimmy, good morning.
Good morning, Ali.
Good morning to you. Right, what's your point then?
Donald Trump, well, I'm going to tell you right off, it's a man I just don't like. I'll tell you why. It's, to use some magic terms, he's bombastic, he's arrogant, and he thinks he can just go where he wants to go and he'll get what he wants because he's a multi-millionaire. I can prove that by when he came over here, he's got a golf club up north and he wanted some ground to build, extend on the ground. A woman wouldn't sell her farm. She brought family up there for years. And he said, for all the trouble that farm cost, it wouldn't cost anything. Give them a new house, rehousing away. But that wasn't the point. She brought her family up and he called it a dilapidated farm. Well, to me, that's arrogance. And if somebody brings a family up in an area and I lived there all the days and money couldn't buy them, I'd take my hat off to them. But Donald Trump, me, fell down in my estimation. And not that I cared much for the man, because I'll tell you why. He's arrogant.
Yeah, but that's his appeal, Jimmy, to a lot of the Americans who are voting for him. And I don't think for one minute that Donald Trump gives a monkey's whether Jimmy Borland in Dundee thinks he's arrogant or not.
But that's his point, Elliot. When people's rights don't matter to him. You could be the man in the moon, it won't kill him. At the end of the day, he wants what he wants, and this is how he's going to get it.
Well, he certainly showed that over the many estate. Well, I agree with you now. I think the way he treated the people was appalling.
Too many people's stories he stood on to get it. And that's what I mean. It's just people should get the right to live as they want to live. If I'm coming in because you've got plenty of money, we'll buy you out and move on. They'll take over. He even took Alex Salmond to court to get the windmills taken out because they were a nice sort of for his golf course. Lost his case. Heard no more about it.
Okay, Jimmy. James, he is and does come across with this arrogance. Is that the appeal to you?
The appeal is he's a very shrewd businessman. He's here to make money. I mean, create jobs. One person not moving is a block to stop jobs. And jobs is what he wants to do. He wants to create economies. He wants to create money.
He talks a good game, but he didn't come through with the jobs in Aberdeen.
Well, you know, that's unfortunate. You know, too many people wanted to put too many roadblocks up, you know, and they stopped him from creating a business environment there. And that's unfortunate. You know,
you say too many people put roadblocks up, but then again, Donald expected just to walk in and do what he wanted.
Well, he, if you're going to invest money, you know, let him do what he's got to do to get
the
job
done.
Why?
He's just there to make money. Why should we just allow him to do what he wants to do?
He's creating money. He's creating jobs. He's creating a future. He's creating. He's building.
Money, do you think he's a successful businessman?
He has a history of not paying his subcontractors.
Come on, Marie.
No, I'm sorry. You cannot dismiss factual evidence. He has a long, long history of numerous court cases from subcontractors, including regular business people like yourself, Jimmy, who are roofers and tilers and plasterers, saying, he hasn't paid me, he's never paid me, he's refusing to pay me. You can't wish those things away.
Well, you get paid when you do the job, okay? If you don't do the job to spec, then you're not going to get paid.
Well, the argument they didn't do a good job doesn't work when the court turns around and says, actually, they did the job.
Well, he paid them, eventually paid them.
But they had to go to court to do it.
Yeah.
If you had to take all your clients to court to get paid, where would you be at the end of the day?
Well, you know, come on.
Back on the phone lines, it's Mary. Hello, Mary.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Right, I've been listening and my blood is actually boiling. That's why I had the phone. This man, I think, is going to cause havoc in his own country in no time at all when he's in there. But what got me was when he's making up his government, one person who I did notice he was talking about, he's got in already, and he was known as a hardliner, but he'd been a member of the Ku Klux Klan. Who wants that in our government for a start? I definitely would not. And as I said to the boy already there, I would have a lovely big straitjacket ready for that man, because he's going to have America on its knees.
Do you believe in everything you read?
I read and listen and watch the news. yes, I watched this guy on the television, and in no way, no way, I would not even have him in the Scottish Parliament. We have flaws as well, but definitely not somebody in the Ku Klux Klan. When you've got so many coloured people living in America, you're going to have a big race fight again. So, no, I don't like the guy. I would love to get my hands on him. I think he's arrogant, and I think an awful lot is going to come out of it, well, about this man in Russia. It has to come out, and I know there's a programme coming on, it's either tomorrow or Tuesday on television about him, and I will be watching it, and I'm telling you, the guy supports them when you're in your studio just now. Well, why haven't you packed your bags up and just gone home now if you support them that much? Because I think you know yourself that there's going to be trouble with that man.
Thank you very much indeed, Mary. Mary,
everything is going way, so sorry.
That's all right. Okay, that's what the programme's about. It's about your opinions. Why haven't you packed your bags and gone back then?
Oh, I don't know. Thanks, Mary. No, you're right. You know, there's going to be trouble. There's going to be a lot of people stand up. There's going to be people in the streets, but it's already happening. That's the problem. America has already turned that corner. There is a big racial divide right now in America. There's a police state going on in America. There's problems with the police force. And Donald Trump's the man to get it right. And as far as your allegations that he's a member of the KKK, the gentleman that he just brought to a cabinet position, that's not true. That's not true at all.
Okay. So you're bursting to get in here on almost everything that was said there.
Well, just two things. I mean, I think Mayor's referring to Jeff Sessions, who's the senator from Alabama that they want to pick for the Attorney General of the United States, which, let's face it, at the end of the day is a very, very powerful position.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jeff Sessions, of course, is senator. He's been elected by the people of Alabama, you know, to represent them more and more on one occasion. He's been reelected. He does have a past that has had some unfortunate incidents. He's made some unfortunate statements. He's owned up to those. At no time, though, has he ever been a member of the Ku Klux Klan. So you have to give the man that.
Right.
He has taken political money from the KKK, but
yes.
He's not a member.
No, he's not a member.
He's not absolutely a member. Not a member.
Yeah. And the other thing is I mean, you know, a racial divide in America, there's been a racial divide in America since the day America was created. The civil rights battle, many people think civil rights and think 1960s, 1970s. Civil rights war is still going on. It depends what you mean by civil rights. If you include things like marriage and gender issues as well as race, then obviously the civil rights race is still going on. There isn't a problem in America. Let's face it, you would not want to be a black male in America today.
No, not at all. My wife's African-American. And the problem, she's from Chicago, just where you're from. And you know, this Black Lives Matter nonsense, it's all lives matter. It's not just black people being shot by police in America. It's white people.
No, but you've got
it's
an
Hispanic
overwhelming
people.
You've got an overwhelming
and that's
percentage.
Obama. And that's because of Obama. He's created this issue, and that's his problem. And Trump's going to go in there and he's going to clean this up. And that was one of his focal points in the run up to the election. Is that he's going to make America great again and bring it back.
Okay, we're going to just hold it there. Once again, the number if you'd like to join us, 0333 2020 401. We'll join Jean in a moment on the lines after these.
You could be next on Scotland's Talkin'.
A very good morning. It's coming up on 11:30. This is Scotland's Talkin'. I'm Ali Bally, and it's good to have your company. The number, as always, is 0333 2020 401 if you'd like to take part in the programme. And we're talking about, will Trump start on Friday acting and behaving like a president? Is he going to be good over the next 4 years? And you've certainly got your views, which is great. Joining me at the moment in the studio, we have James Doherty, a Glasgow businessman, an American stroke Glaswegian. So he's putting his point of view. And it's fair to say that he supports Mr. Trump. And we also have Murray Leith, who's a lecturer in politics at the University of West of Scotland. And he's sort of balancing it out at the moment. Jean, what do you think? Oops, I've lost you. Let me try again. Jean, what do you think?
I think World War III is coming, Ali.
Right.
And I'm being honest, because
really?
Donald Trump is an ignorant, arrogant, sarcastic man. He causes trouble wherever he goes. Look what he done to Barack Obama about his colour, and was he born in America? Nicola Sturgeon and him can shake hands right up to the elbows. And I agree with that. I mean, why is James not back in America?
Because he's, I don't see the point, and you know, that's the second question on whether James works here or not. He enjoys life in Scotland, as he says. It's a better life in Scotland than it is in America at the moment. Is that, you would agree with that, James? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely. Like I spoke to Murray over the break there. You know, just look at Chicago. Murray grew up in Chicago. My wife's from Chicago. And last month, in December, there was over 700 shootings in Chicago. Over 70 people killed. Did you hear about it in the news? No, it's not been spoken about. It's hidden. Obama sweeps things under the rug, doesn't tell America, doesn't tell the world what's really going on. Donald Trump is going to address these situations. He spoke about it publicly, and he's going to tell the world what's really going on, and he's going to make sure that there's change.
Murray, go on then.
I think he's going to bring back roots. For the blacks.
I can't see that. My wife's African-American. She voted for Donald Trump. You got 50 million people in America that voted for Donald Trump.
87% of African-Americans voted for Hillary Clinton, though. I just point that out.
Mm. Just moving on to, you know, Jean there mentioned Obama. Murray, what do you think Obama's legacy is going to be?
Well, I mean, first of all, he's, his big legislative legacy, what many of us thought his legacy was, would be Obamacare. Mm. And, of course, the Republicans are literally hell-bent on and dismantling that. They've already been...
I was going to say, they're doing it, aren't they?
Yes, they've already sent legislative instructions to committees in the House to begin dismantling it.
And in your opinion, then, for those of us who maybe don't understand what Obamacare is, is it a good system or is it a bad system?
Well, if you're one of the 45 million Americans who didn't previously have health care and you now have health care, I mean, I imagine most of them would say it's a good thing. However, the trouble is people have to remember it's not the NHS. Mm-hmm. What it basically is it says to private companies, you can sell people health care and we will subsidize that depending upon the income of those people. So what happens is, of course, if you're reasonably well off and you're doing reasonably well but you don't have health care, you've got to buy it from a private company and the government doesn't back you as well as they do for poorer people. So the squeezed middle, if you will, gets squeezed just a little more. That's why several of those people don't like it. But if you're working a low minimum wage job, you've got three kids and you have no health care, you're now covered. So you're great from that perspective.
But I presume, and maybe I presume wrongly, because you can't presume anything with Mr. Trump, he's not just taking it away and not bringing something in, surely.
Well, you've got to remember, first of all, for everybody, Donald Trump can say what he likes about legislation. He can say, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. You've got to remember, Donald Trump is president of the United States. He cannot legislate one single little thing. Now, he can carry out executive authority decisions in some areas, but for Obamacare or to replace Obamacare, to repeal Obamacare, these decisions have to be made in Congress by both the House and the Senate, as you say, working in Congress. They can repeal Obamacare and not replace it. And at the moment, they don't have anything to replace
it. But the Republicans have both. They've got the House and they've got the
Senate.
Exactly. And on the flip side of that, Obamacare, all he did was push 45 million people onto Medicare. That's all he did.
No, he didn't.
He pushed them aside and said, hey, guess what? You're in Medicare now and you're going to pay a deductible.
No, Medicare is entirely different.
In layman's terms, you go and you pay to go see a doctor. You pay a $150 deposit. You pay $100 to go see a dentist. That's all it is. That's all Obamacare was. It was a big shuffle of hands here.
You're saying, James, that with it just, if it does disappear, that's... It won't make a blind bit of difference.
It's not going to make a difference. What it's going to do is going to put money back in middle-income people. Middle-income America will get money back in their pockets because they're paying for Obamacare.
Well, that's a very sweeping statement that I don't entirely agree with, and I don't think the facts would support.
Absolutely. I'm telling you right now. I've been there, done it, and witnessed it as it happened.
Okay, let's take another caller. Jerry, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, Ollie.
Good morning, Jerry. What's your point today, then?
It's a question for James Doherty. I want to ask him, has he ever met Donald Trump?
No, unfortunately I haven't. And when I would shake his hand.
Don't say unfortunately. Say fortunately.
Why is that? Why should he say that, Jerry, when that's not what he believes?
You don't have a clue what you're talking about. Now, what part of Glasgow are you from?
I grew up in Maryhill, my friend, and which part of America are you from?
No, I'm from the Milton.
Exactly, you've never stepped, you probably never stepped in America. Probably never worked, never lived, never breathed, have you?
And I never will, never would.
So what's your point then, Jerry? You don't know what you know, you're saying that James is basically talking through a hole in his nose here. That's what you're saying. But at the end of the day, you've never been there.
He's an apologist for Donald Trump, and he's never even met him.
No, I'm American that believes in what he's bringing to the table, and I'm thinking that he's going to make America great again. And I think that people are seeing a bad or are reading bad information on the news. I mean,
you were right the first time. We're seeing it. You know, it's not just reading it, James. We are actually seeing it on the television. It's like a car crash sometimes. You know, but that seems to be what appeals to you, doesn't it?
No, it's not what appeals to me. It's what he's going to do. It's the change. You know, we're tired. People are tired of politicians. Brexit, look at Brexit, for example. People are sick of politicians. These people are there to benefit themselves. This guy's not here to benefit himself. This guy's already there. He's made his own money. He's here to make America great again. And that's what Americans want. They want change. This world needs change. It's time for change.
I don't think in Scotland or the UK we can actually lecture America on anything, Jerry, because, you know, just as James says there, look at the state we're in at the moment. We can kid on as much as we like that we know or our government know where they're going with Brexit. They haven't a clue. And they still haven't a clue. That's why they're going all over the place and all over the houses. So I don't think we're right that we can lecture.
But of course, the difference is a majority of the people that voted in the referendum voted for Brexit. Okay, mm-hmm. A larger percentage of the people that voted in the presidential race voted against Donald Trump.
Well, I've read different figures, and that's one of the ones I was going to come to next. Yeah. You know, it seems to depend what you read, who you believe.
No, you don't have to read or believe anything. You just look at the official vote tallies published by the official state governments. A majority of people who voted in the presidential race voted for Hillary Clinton. But the system is not done on popular vote. The system is done on the Electoral College. And in the Electoral College, Donald Trump won. So under the constitutional structure, he's the legitimate president.
And that's all down to population and the size of the state and the people. And so overall, yeah, Hillary may have had 3 million more votes, but Electoral College votes, Trump got it.
But it's worth pointing out that we are literally talking about 70,000 people.
But going back, Obama had less votes than the previous.
But that's because there's more voters today. Obama won a majority in both of his races.
And there's more voters because there's more immigrants. There's more people flooding into the country. That's why.
The United States has always been a nation of immigrants. You're an immigrant. I'm an immigrant. Everybody in America, ultimately, is an immigrant, unless, of course, you're a member of the First Nation tribe.
But immigration's a big problem today. There's more criminals out there. There's more terrorism than ever. And you don't know who's coming in through the front door.
Actually, that's not factually accurate either, I'm afraid. That is not factually accurate. Crime has been dropping and dropping at a substantial rate. Okay, you can't just make sweeping statements.
Not in the
statements.
United States.
No,
not in the United States.
No, I'm sorry. You just can't make sweeping statements that aren't backed up by facts.
No, not at all. You don't get that's the problem. I'll go back to Chicago. Well, they're not talking about it because they're not
they
recording it.
They are talking
it.
About it. It's reported. You could read the Chicago Tribune this weekend and they talk about it. The trouble is crime is dropping, but people's perception of crime as dropping is not the case because it's more widely reported across a wide range of media.
Okay, we've got two Johns on the line, so just to differentiate them for me, is John and East Lothian, first of all. John, good morning.
Good morning, Alan. Happy New Year to you.
And
I'm listening to two Yanks there talking. I'm not joking. They're like two Arabs with a camel in the middle of a tent with a sandstorm round about them.
I'm Scottish.
He's Scottish. Murray's saying he's Scottish.
Who went Scottish? Mr. Kelly?
No, Murray is Scottish and you know, but they both have American accents. Anyway, what's your point, John?
Well, they're both like John Wayne being cowboys. The one's good. One guy's good. Talking about the presidency, President Obama, I admired the guy, had charisma. At the end of his last tenure there, obviously he's coming to it now, he had no powers as a world leader because they knew in a lot of the policies that he tried to put through wouldn't go through. And that's what happened when he went to the big meeting with Putin and the Chinese leader and what have you. They sort of tried to sideline him, because he has no powers. He's an outgoing president. Donald Trump is a dangerous guy, I'm telling you. He's a very dangerous guy. And I believe, to be quite honest with you, he was up to something in, up in the big hotel in Moscow.
There's absolutely no proof of that whatsoever.
Let me say something to you. His intelligence chief, the one he's appointed, the head of this, well, the new CIA director came in, and he has said that there were things going on. And obviously, he doesn't want to believe it. Mr. Trump doesn't want to believe it. So if he's not going to listen to his intelligence chief, America's in a very dangerous position. He was briefed. President Obama allowed them to be briefed as incoming threat. He'd been told that there were things going on. He knows that there's things being going on. But I think in this old game of poker again, with Putin, Putin's not going to play his hand, the best cards right away at the game of poker. He's holding back with these cards, and he'll strike with these cards. And a lot of things got to come out maybe in the middle of his presidency. Do you understand?
Okay, John, thank you for that. How is this best buddy with Putin thing going to work out, do you think?
It's going to be problematic. It's already problematic for him, of course, because Russia is not very popular with the United States, never has been. There's always been an element of Russians who view the United States positively, but there's a large element of them that view them very negatively, and vice versa. I mean, you know, after the situation in Crimea, of course, and the whole situation in Ukraine, which is, you know, the Russians, you know, suddenly walk in and annex a whole area of a foreign country. The United States is faced with a very difficult position in that regard, and it's going to be problematic. He might run into a situation in the Senate where he wants to do one thing and the Senate is saying, no, you can't.
Mm. Right. Again, would you have a view on that? I mean, do you think Putin and him are going to shake hands, smile, and everything's going to be rosy, James?
I think there's going to be respect. I think Putin respects Trump. I don't think Putin respects Obama. And I think that Trump's not going to be messed around. Obama says things and does something different. Trump, I think, when he says he's going to do something, I think he's going to do it.
He's going to do it, right. OK, we'll go to the other John. John, stand by. We're with you next.
This is Scotland's Talkin'.
Scotland's Talkin' on a Sunday morning, and we've got about 10 minutes of the show left. Let's go to John then. John Carr, how are you?
Good morning, Ali. How are you, my friend?
Very well,
morning,
thank
gentlemen.
You. Good morning to you. I was just going to say, well, I'm sorry we've held you on for so long, so let's get straight to the point, John.
Right, well, I find it very refreshing to have a gentleman who has been voted in as the new President of the United States who is prepared to stand up and say what he means. Politicians, both here and across the pond in America, seem to think that it's their God-given right to stand up and lie through their teeth to the public and then change it at a whim. I think with Donald Trump, what he's done was, he stood up, he spoke his mind, he was open about it. A lot of people gave the opinion that they disagreed with him, but when it came to voting, they made their mark. They voted him in. So I find him very refreshing. He does have his ways, yes, but then look at the other choice, Hillary Clinton. She had her ways as well. The Clinton Foundation, such like... I don't want to go too much into it, but I think that being a non-politician is more refreshing and more good for America than to have another politician.
Okay, John, what was it, Murray, in your opinion, a need by the American public to have someone different and to have someone who wasn't caught up in the what they could see as the American politics system?
I think that appealed to a large number of people. And at the end of the day, enough people in enough states to put him over the line in those mm-hmm. states. Because I said slightly earlier, in several states, it was razor thin close. You're literally talking, you know, a few thousand people would switch their votes and things would be entirely different. So I think he appealed to those people. And I think some of the statements John just making there, some of those people held the same ideas and voted for that. At the same time, a lot of people voted for him because he wasn't Hillary Clinton, and they would have voted for any Republican who wasn't Hillary Clinton, and a lot of people that would never have voted for Donald Trump because he's a Republican or he was standing on the Republican ticket. So there's a mixture of different things. But I think, yes, at the end of the day, there was a big enough group that added to and took him over the line.
What do you think we've learned about him over the last few months?
Well, we've learned that he's, and I hate to disagree with John here, but we've learned he's as good as a politician because he has made statements and then done a 180 and said the complete opposite. and then denied that he's ever said that, even when presented with physical evidence that he has, whether that be audio tape, videotape, or Twitter statements. He can do 180s. He does change his mind. He seems very mercurial. And this is going to be a real problem. It's going to be a real problem when he's in office. And I'll tell you, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd never run for office or stand for office in a million years, because everything you say is dissected. But whoever works for him as a speechwriter, and whoever deals with him, and whoever has to interpret his statements for the wider public, I hope they get paid a lot of money.
James, it's true there what Murray says, is it not? That, and is that part of the appeal, that he does make a statement, then turn around and turn around again. Does that appeal to you about him?
Well, you know, I think that's all politicians today. I think everybody does that.
You but know, he's said but, not to be a politician.
But as things change in an ever-evolving world, we say one thing and do another. You know, it's just part of what America is and part of the world is.
But is that really what we expect from the leader of the biggest country in the world, really? You know?
Well, sometimes you don't know all the facts. Sometimes you make a statement not knowing really what everything is. And as things, it's like a layer of onion here. As things peel back and he gets more and more involved, I think he's going to become a stronger leader. And I like how he uses the Twitter. And I think it's important that he gets, you know, comments out and says on things that are happening in real time instead of reacting.
Do you think he'll continue with the policy that he's doing and like everybody switches on their phones in the morning to see what he's been saying now?
Well, when you become President of the United States, they actually take your bank accounts and your credit cards and all that away from you, and it's and if they're very smart, they'll probably also take his phone away from him. I know if I was his chief of staff, I'd have said, Donald, can I have your phone, please? And please tell me you don't have any more Edna Way.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the official account is usually run by other people.
And I was going to say, who's driving the bus?
Exactly. But he's made it plain that he drives the bus.
Mm.
And at the end of the day, it's, as I say, he's going to have to adjust to being president. He's going to have to adjust to being president. He cannot continue the way he's going because there are ramifications for those actions.
I don't think he has to, because look at America. Look at the jobs that have already been saved. Look at the Dow Jones. Look at his sword. The minute he became president or president-elect, the Dow Jones soared over 1,000 points.
And then dropped like a rock immediately after.
No, that's typical. But no, it's still up there. It's up over 1,000 points since he became president-elect. He saved 5,000 jobs that were going to Mexico.
That's the car jobs, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that seems, you know, very much a very quick reaction from the car manufacturer that actually, you know, yeah, we're going to build a new factory in Mexico. Well, okay, we're going to charge you for every car that come across. Oh, well, we'll build it in America then. So therefore, that's giving Donald Trump the ammunition he needs, is it not?
Yes and no, because we also know that his claim about saving 1,000 jobs in Indiana, he didn't mention was how much government money they were giving to subsidize those jobs.
Right.
Yeah, but look at that solar plant that Obama invested in, $350 million, went bankrupt over a year in California, Northern California. I mean, same thing.
Yes, but investing, the trouble is we know we've got to invest in alternative technologies because we know the fossil fuels are running out.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Scotland is one of the world leaders, remember, in renewable technologies, and we've had a lot of companies that the government, the British government, has invested in that have gone bust as well. Now, don't get me wrong. You can pick examples from both sides. Let's be perfectly frank here. You can pick examples where things have gone well. You can pick examples where things have gone differently. All I'm saying is that when you become president, there are regulations and laws that don't necessarily apply to you when you're a candidate.
It's getting to that time that we're going to have to wind up. I don't want to go to another caller and then have to cut them off, which would be of a shame. But so thank you very much indeed for all the calls that are sitting there waiting to come in at the moment. We've only got a minute left or so. You're looking forward then, James, to this weekend. You know, do you wish you were there? Are you not tempted by what many, I think there is actually some of our callers who would pay for you to get on a flight and go. You know, it would be a one-way ticket, but are you not tempted?
No, not at all. I'm happy here. I like it. But I think people need to give this man a chance. Let him do his job. Let's see if he lives and dies by the sword. And I think he's going to do good.
And you think he'll stay the course and do the full term and, you know, hang on in there without any legal issues being brought to
him? I think he'll be there 4 years, maybe eight. But I think, you know, I think he's going to give the man an opportunity to turn the country around. Give him a chance.
Murray? your thoughts for the weekend ahead and the next 4 years.
After this electoral cycle in the United States, after Brexit, after the 2016 election results, I've given up prognostication, okay? Because any political scientist that told you he saw all of these things coming is probably, you know, twisting
telling
the
lies.
Truth slightly.
Telling lies, come
because
on.
Because my crystal ball is well off on a couple of these things. At the same time, I think what we have to say is, it's going to happen. He's going to have to learn to deal with Congress. And remember, just because the Congress shares the same party label as you, Barack Obama once said the best thing that happened to him was when the Democrats lost control of the Senate. It made them easier to deal with in some respects. So he's going to have great difficulty adjusting to a system where it isn't like business. You can't just tell people, go and do this and it happens. That is not the way it works in politics. That's not the way it's going to work for him.
Thank you very much indeed, Murray, and to James as well. Murray Leith, a lecturer in politics at the University of the West of Scotland, and James Doherty, Scottish businessman. Their thoughts, and thank you for yours as well. Next week on the programme, we'll be looking at ScotRail. Our guest and your guest in the studio will be, once again, Phil Vester, who's Managing Director of Abellio, who look after ScotRail. It's been a few months now since he came and joined us, so let's see what he's got to say this time. He thinks it's improving. Do you think the railways in Scotland are improving? I look forward to your calls next Sunday. From me, Ali Bally, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Bye-bye.